College Golf Talk is back. It is 2026. We have returned after a little holiday sabbatical. Steve Burkowski, Brittley Romine with you. Happy New Year, my friend. And I'm going to say it, even though it's February. Oh, it is February 3rd on a Tuesday morning, but it's our first time to say Happy New Year to each other, to those that are faithful listeners to the pod. And lo and behold, college golf off and running. We're less than 4 months away from La Costa.
Berko, that's the latest Happy New Year I've ever heard in my life, I will say. But I appreciate it. And I'm looking behind you. For those who can't see this, you have snow on the ground. We felt like we've had snow on the ground the last couple of days here. It's been sub-freezing. And it's been the coldest, I think. I lost some of my plants. I didn't cover them. But at least there's not actual snow on the ground.
Yeah, that's what happens when you move to the Midwest. We haven't seen much grass. You don't hit 25 degrees very often, but it's part of the charm in Northeast Ohio. We've loved it. The kids love the snow.
Are your Christmas lights still up?
No. That's what I've learned. So I'm going to say the 28th or 29th of December, it got up to 50 degrees. Just a little anomaly, took everything down outside. And since New Year's Eve, when it snowed about a foot, we haven't seen 30 degrees. And I look every third house, you still see the lights, the wreaths, because you can't really get to it. So I learned quickly, as much as I love the Christmas flair, when you can get something above freezing and there's no snow, get them off.
Yeah, that's a good, some good advice I just heard recently too, was something like, if you could get it done in 60 seconds, do it now. Which I know Christmas lights don't take 60 seconds, but you know, if you have a window where it's 50 degrees, do it, because
We brought in the toy soldiers. We brought everything in because we just kind of knew. And it sort of kicked off the new year. But you've been busy, right? Just because we haven't touched on the college golf aspect. A lot of good amateur events you were front and center for.
Yeah, doing a little bit of scouting for our picks, our conference picks. But no, it was good to get, for the first time, I'd never been to the Sally, the South Atlantic Women's Amateur at Oceanside over in Ormond Beach, which is about an hour south of Ponte Vedra, where obviously TPC Sawgrass and the PGA Tour headquarters are. And it's an event that, you know, we had it on, you know, I was talking about it on Golf Today, Golf Central, Gary Williams Show, Five Clubs, did a little preview article as well, a little look back, but it's the longest running golf tournament at a single site, like in the world. And, you know, you go back and the New Year's Invitational in Tampa, a men's event, they've actually held more editions. But the Sally at Oceanside has been around for longer. 1926 was the first event. So to be able to go there and look back through the archives, our friend David Tennyson, College Golf Book, was a huge help in going back through old newspapers and getting cool nuggets on Babes Arias and Patty Berg and, you know, all of those players, you know, great players that have come through and won the Sally. And I was able to do a really nice piece and had a really awesome time at Oceanside. There's a man by the name of Joe Eggers who is just he's the muscle behind the scenes, and he's going to be the tournament director starting next year. And, you know, hopefully for people listening to this, if you want some place to play where it's decent weather, and this year it was great weather, in January, before you go back to college, the Sally is a really cool event, great course and fun course. And so that was great. And then was able to get up to the Jones Cup where on the, you know, looking back in hindsight, maybe that wasn't so bad in terms of it was only a 36 hole event. But looking at what the LPGA did this past week, where they canceled the final round because of extreme cold, the Jones Cup canceled their second round, or I guess the final round, because of fog. They had too much of a fog delay. They couldn't play past Sunday evening because people are going back to school, but it was perfect conditions on that Saturday afternoon. But, you know, credit for the people at Ocean Forest. We did a little closest to the pen contest and was really impressed by the amount of players who actually showed up from that. Because, you know, Berko, like, these guys are like, what? Why aren't we playing golf? Like, we're not going to go do this silly thing. But, you know, you had a lot of top-notch players show up and hit a little wedge shot on their 19th hole, and it was fun to see. So that was a great event. William Sides from SMU won that. The guy who putts from the opposite side, so he's aptly named. And now we're ready. I think the Gator next week, and it'll be my first event.
I love it. I went down to South America for the second consecutive year, part of the Latin America Amateur Championship. Thanks to Seller Shy, CBS Sports producer, Augusta National, the RNA, the USGA for including me in that. What a great, quaint golf course. Lima Golf Club, right in Peru, a 7-minute walk from the hotel. We kept saying on the broadcast, if you thought Central Park was a golf course, that's kind of the vision you had, because you looked around, virtually every direction is basically one big rectangle or square, and there were buildings 5, 10, 15, 20 stories high. So it was a real pleasure to be a part of it. Saw a lot of great golf. Matteo Pulsini pulling off the win in a playoff, and he was in the second to last group. I was with the last group, so in the playoff, I took Matteo, Amelia took the other guy still in it, and Matteo hit the second shot out of the right rough. I mean, right into the trees. I would dare to say it came out of groove or too low, and it went through everything. And he just turned, he laughed, he said 95% error, because that could have hit the tree, gone anywhere, hit a branch, and it was fun. But that was my small sampling of golf, because I've been busy doing Atlanta 10 basketball. You know, I've done a few games the last couple of years. I think many people are unaware and probably don't care. But I do it on downtime, if you will. And you know, Tim McCormick and I are, you know, partnering up for about 15 to 20 games this year. So each and every weekend, I'm calling a game or two, and it will culminate with the conference championship in Pittsburgh in March. And I'm loving it. Absolute blast. As a famous camera guy on our staff said, well, you're not the best around, but you're the best we got. That's how I feel. But I'm kind of finding a nice groove, and it's a good change of pace. And the A-10's pretty solid. St. Louis, they're going to surprise somebody in the tournament. They're a top 20 team in the country. They've only lost once on a heartbreak desperation three by Stanford. Mark my words now, barring something unforeseen, they're a 5 or 6 seed, most likely.
I think I saw 7 the last time I was looking at the bracketology.
It will depend what others do ahead of them. I'd have to look at the brackets. They have a legitimate chance to make it to the second weekend. They're that good. And then I had a George Mason game last week at St. Bonaventure. They're down 14 in the second half. They come back, they rally, they win. They're 20-2. The best start in the history of the program. I think they'll need some luck along the way, but it would be a shame if they go 29-4 and don't get in. But
so they're going to be a team that would probably need to win. So the A-10 will get 2 bids if someone
correct. Other than St. You talk to people, win. You need St. Louis to not win the conference championship, the tournament, that is, because then you're maybe a 1-bid league, which it gets into the whole KenPom, the net ranking, et cetera. So we won't bore you anymore. That's what we've been up to few months, having a blast. It's a lot of fun. But in recent weeks, a couple of big news stories, and what Liv has done throughout recent years. Oh, who are these college kids? Who are these guys finishing up school or maybe still in school? And one thing for certain, we won't have an NCAA individual champion winning 2 straight years.
Yeah, probably the least surprising news, I think, if you were going to say a top player, first team All-American, is going to Live midseason, I think Michael Lasasa would be, he would be first off my board. I don't know about you, but so that wasn't super surprising to know that he's forgoing the remainder of his college eligibility. And joining Phil Mickelson's High Flyers. And, you know, good for him. You know, that was the financial decision. But I don't know, Berko. I'm having a hard time. And he spoke to the media today, or I guess overnight, since they're over there in Saudi Arabia. And he keeps talking about how he thrives in the team environment. He's a team guy. You know, he loves the team. This is why it's such a great opportunity. If you're a team guy,
team
guys don't leave in January. You know, team guys don't, you know, cause drama, you know, like he reportedly did during the Walker Cup. You know, team guys don't, you know, team guys aren't about me. They're about the team. And, you know, you listen to Chris Molloy's comments, and I think you can kind of read between the lines that I think everyone there is disappointed. You know, they were hoping, because they need him to be any sort of threat at the NCAA championship. And now without him, they are a borderline NCAA championship field team. They're a borderline top 30 program, I think, without Michael Lasasso at his best. So I guess the saving grace is that he didn't play all that much in the fall. So maybe they are a little bit better than we think. But again, they're going to have to go out and prove it with inexperience. And hopefully those freshmen can pick up the slack and try to do their best. But yeah, this is a situation where it's great for Michael Lasasso. I don't think that he got as much as people are, you know, putting out there in the rumor mill. But yeah, it's just disappointing, I think, for the sport and disappointing for certainly Ole Miss.
And we wish him the best. I get it. The dollar bills go flying. I don't agree with it necessarily, but I'll never begrudge somebody for trying to put something in their pockets and seeing where it ends up. So be curious to see how he performs, develops, and maybe more importantly, and I think we saw it with Caleb Surratt, it doesn't matter how good you are, and I mean it respectfully, you're a kid. And now you're traveling with people twice as old as you, major champs. For, you know, you better be able to be social, to interact. That's where, I don't care how much money you make, you're going to be on the other side of the planet and be like, what am I doing?
Yeah, it's a tough life too, especially, you know, when you might not have the maturity, you know, as you said, you're still just a kid. You're a college kid. You know, the maturity needs to be there for you to travel to all these places. And, you know, it's a different environment in LIB too. There's a lot of temptation there off the golf course. So, you know, hopefully Michael Lasasso can, you know, mature and have success. And who knows, maybe he'll take a similar route to Eugenio Chikara and play a few years there and then, you know, try his hand at Q school. But I think this kind of signaled that, you know, he didn't think that he could catch Ben James and PGA Tour University. Ben James, number one in that race. Michael Lasasso, I believe, had dropped to three at the time that he had decided to sign with LIV. So he didn't think that he could catch Ben and get that tour card. And to him, and I think to a lot of guys, this might be the better alternative than, you know, trying to play on the Korn Ferry Tour for those purses and try to be top 20 on that tour. So, it's interesting overall, but I think it's interesting also too. A lot of people don't know, but Michael Lasasso obviously started his college career at North Carolina State. Caleb Surratt, before he signed with Tennessee, was committed to North Carolina State. So these are two guys who have grown up in North Carolina together and could have been college teammates.
Other big news in recent weeks: good friend, great man, amazing coach, Mike McGraw, stepping away from Baylor, leading the Bears, and won a national title, Oklahoma State, nearly 20 years ago, out there in Oregon at Sun River. One of the best, one of the greatest, would give you a shirt off his back, and we wish him well, and Pam, in this next step in both their lives.
Yeah, and that was the overall theme. And, you know, I had a chance to talk with some of his former players. Jonathan Moore, you mentioned Sun River being one of them. That was one of the great stories. And that was before my time, but that was, you know, you were there for that, Berko. But Jonathan Moore, not able to break 100, really. You know, shot, I think, 65 or something like that for 9 holes one day at Stillwater Country Club. OB, you know, off the tee, off every hole, and you know, didn't play that first year. And you know, this is a situation where I guess in modern times he would have been, he might have been kicked by the wayside. He might have been in the portal. He might have quit. But Mike McGraw wasn't even the coach at the time. He was coaching the women's team for that 1 year, and you know, he just poured into Jonathan Moore. Didn't really talk about golf. Got coffee with him a lot. Talked about life and told him that things were gonna improve incrementally. And when McGraw got the job that next year on the men's side after Holder stepped down, you know, Jonathan Moore wins the individual title as well. And you know, talking with Mike and going back through, and you know, we're gonna get him on this podcast too, because he's working on a list of his 25 best memories from coaching golf. And it's not just the trophies and all that. It's the memories like, you know, being on that 72nd green with Jonathan Moore after, you know, they sweep the national title that year, things like that. So I'm interested to see and hear his thoughts. But yeah, I mean, Berko, you were there for those, you know, the glory days, you know, of Oklahoma State, and people, you know, would argue, and I'd argue those are still going, but Mike McGraw, some of those teams that he had too, you could argue that he should have had more than one as a head coach. He had two as an assistant back with Charles Howell in, I believe, what, 2000, and then with Alabama in 2014 as an assistant. But he should have had more as a head coach.
He was good. He was good. But you hit on a key thing, and as you said, we'll get him on hopefully in the coming weeks. But and I'll ask you as well. But two memories from me of Mike through all the years. Probably the first is similar to what you just said with Jonathan Moore. You know, he was the head coach when Wyndham Clark started at Oklahoma State. And we've documented it. It's the feature I probably take the most pride in. And
yeah, that's your best one.
Starting my 27th year. Thank you. And seemingly continued to have legs a decade later as he won the U.S. Open. You know, but he lost his mom. He struggled emotionally, this, that, and the other. And Wyndham's father, Randall, never hesitated. He said, he was my son's second dad, as Randall Clark told me that day. And gosh, was it 2013, 2014, when we sat down in Vegas at Southern Highlands, never met him. Himself. I can't thank that man enough for what he was able to do for my son. And he said, you know, Wyndham, it's not about golf right now. I think you should stop playing. I think we need to work on you as a person, as a young man dealing with the loss of your mother. And I just remember that whole afternoon sitting there with all of them in separate interviews, and really spoke to the kind of man Mike McGraw is. And then years earlier, heck, it might have been a campus tour back in the College Central days. I can't remember the specifics, but you go to Stillwater, you eat at Eskimo Joe's. At least you should. Yeah. Burger, fries. And as Mike said, well, it's amazing, and you lose a week off your life. And I heard the rumors he is the quickest eater in town. I get after it pretty quickly. Mike McGraw made me look like I've never picked up my fork, and he's trimmer and more slender than I am. And I was like, wow, the stories are true. So those are a couple of the many good times on so many levels I had with Mike McGraw.
Yeah. So the key to Mike McGraw staying so lean is that, you know, from by all accounts, he cannot stop moving. He is a nervous Nelly. He's always has to be occupied and super competitive. And I think those are great qualities in, you know, a competitor, a coach, a winning coach. And you mentioned the food. I was going to bring that up. I talked to Cooper Dossie, who played with him or played for him at Baylor. Cooper's now on the Corn Ferry Tour playing well. And he said there was one evening where they had gone out during a tournament to an Italian restaurant, and Mike McGraw would always get spaghetti and meatballs. And Colin Kober, who played on that team as well, decided that he was going to order the same thing and race McGraw without telling him. So he didn't let him know. And so the way that Cooper describes it is they're about 75% done with their plates when McGraw notices that Colin Kober is trying to beat him. So Mike McGraw drops his knife and his fork and just grabs the rest of the spaghetti with his hands and just eats it like an animal and just kicks his butt. So that, I mean, that's those types of things too, because coaches have to be tough. I mean, you mentioned Wyndham Clark. Like, Wyndham Clark cleaned out his locker multiple times and quit the team. And, you know, Mike McGraw let him back. But, like, you have to be tough in certain situations like that. But then you also have to have the side of you that, you know, like the eating, you know, something like that. And I think Mike McGraw, you know, brought the best of both worlds almost better than anybody. I mean, if he had a few more national championships as a head coach, you'd probably put him right up there on the Mount Rushmore of college golf coaches. I would still probably, there could be an argument that he can sneak on there, but yeah, I mean, just incredible. And the stuff that you hear about when he was the assistant at Alabama, and how Coach Sewell had assembled this great team, and, you know, Mike McGraw was struggling at the time just with the pressure of Oklahoma State. And I talked to Mike Holder as well, and he said, I don't know if Mike remembers this, but I was doing him a favor because, you know, when I hired him, I thought, man, like, no one is going to outwork this guy. Like, he is going to work harder than everyone. We're going to win every tournament. Like, no one will beat us. But he said his best quality as a coach ended up being, you know, the downfall of him as the head coach at Oklahoma State, because he worked too hard and he cared too much. And as Holder said, he was not Mike McGraw at that time. And you could credit Pam a lot with that as well. That led my story a couple of weeks ago, was how the day after they got back from missing the match play cut, or missing the cut at Crabapple in 2013, Holder had called McGraw in, and McGraw could see the writing on the wall, and he would be, you know, let go later that month. But he went out to recruit that next day, and Pam sent him an email because she couldn't talk to him in person because his, you know, he would get too defensive and his walls would go up and it wouldn't be effective. But she sent him, you know, this long email with a bunch of scripture and all of these things. And it was kind of just that moment that, like, Mike McGraw knew that he couldn't keep, you know, being this version of himself. He had to get back to why he loved coaching. And I don't think anyone could question that he didn't do that, starting in 2014 with Alabama and through to Baylor. I mean, just one of the best, as you said, like, just one of the best guys. Like, anytime you talk to him, you always feel like you've been enlightened, and that's not a characteristic that a lot of people have. And I'll leave you with this. It's a really cool quote that I've been thinking about. And, you know, Mike McGraw would always have this question on his podcast of, you know, what was the best advice you've ever received? And he said, and no one had ever asked me that. So he had got inducted into the Oklahoma Golf Hall of Fame last year, and he shared that advice. And he said, and this pertains to coaching, but you could pertain it to anything, you know, any career or any job that you have, whether professionally or, you know, even being a parent. But, you know, you better act like what you're doing is important, because it really is. And you could add on to that, like, if you don't act like you care, then no one else is going to care about what you're doing anyway. So I think those are really cool words to live by, and especially for us covering college golf, because college golf doesn't get the accolades and the attention of Scottie Scheffler and the PGA Tour and the majors and stuff. But if we don't care about it, if we don't do a podcast and we don't, you know, cover it like it's the Super Bowl, no one else is going to care either. So I think we do a great job of pouring the passion into the sport, and hopefully people who listen to this love college golf a little bit more because of us.
Yeah, look at you getting deep and philosophical, but I like it, right? That's how you got to do it. But actions
have here.
Now, yeah, real quickly, some results already in the can. Texas men, they won the Arizona NIT by one over the Wildcats. Tommy Morrison birding the last to make the difference. Pepperdine, they hold serve at home, winning by 17 at North Ranch. For the ladies, Auburn, Katie Cranston double dipping at the UCF Challenge. FSU winning, getting their first win of the season in Mexico, 3 clear of Oklahoma State. Florida women outlasting Duke by 1, but Blue Devil freshman Rayanne Malixie getting her first collegiate win at the CBEST Invitational. And then the Arkansas women, 6 shots clear over Vandy and Ole Miss down in Puerto Rico. The Therese Hession out in California wrapping up today. We'll give you an update on that tomorrow. So that's what's already happened in the last 7 to 10 days, but we're going to sort of spin it forward to the Big Four conferences, what we're looking for, who we're expecting to do something or maybe not. And we'll start with the ACC. And when you look at the men, I kind of feel like it's Virginia and everyone else, at least right now. They're not a fluke. We talked about it in the fall, but I think we also discussed this is their window. They've been knocking on the door. They had a chance a year ago playing for a national championship. But if the Cavaliers are going to bust through, it's Ben James and crew, I believe, get it done in 2026.
And especially with Michael Lee, you know, having the type of close to his fall with, you know, that match that he won 7-6 or something like that at the East Lake Cup, and, you know, playing well in that 9-hole stroke play too in at Golf Club of Georgia. So now Virginia and Bowen Sargent feel like they have like their five and they're going to roll with it. And so, yeah, I agree with you. It's Virginia and everybody else. A couple teams, though, I think that I would have my eye on that could potentially get better. North Carolina, Carson Burtek-Knoll, the freshman, I think could be potentially freshman of the year based on how he's played this spring. I saw him a little bit at the Jones Cup. Like, he's an interesting cat. Like, he has a really good kind of fun personality and a game that he knows his misses and just super solid. Georgia Tech, it's going to be interesting on how Bruce Hepler's final semester in college golf. You know, we have Mike McGraw retire now. Bruce Hepler is retiring at the end of the season. Will that put too much pressure on that program? Because Bruce Hepler has not won an NCAA championship as a head coach. Georgia Tech has never won. That's one of your favorite lines, is that, you know, with however many, you know, great teams and great players that have gone through that program, they get the big goose egg. But here's a team that's a little bit further down in the rankings, and that's Clemson. Jackson Byrd was banged up in the fall. This is a guy who's a first-team All-American AJGA player. So he's starting to, you know, find some better health, shake off the rust. I think we could have a big spring for him, and that would make Clemson, you know, maybe a challenger there, especially because this ACC is decided in match play and anything can happen. So Clemson would be a team that's currently outside the top 30 that I could see, you know, being at La Costa in late May.
The ACC women, not a stretch. I still can't wrap my head around that Stanford's in the ACC, but they are. You know, Wake Forest, we know they're as good as anyone. You know, I want to see if Duke maybe gets a little traction in the spring. We're a broken record, but until Ann Walker forgets how to get the best players in the country, they're always going to be the one to beat. And I kind of like, because I feel like the last few years, Brantley, we're like, oh, do they go undefeated? Is this the year? Well, that got knocked out early in the fall, and I think that's actually going to serve them well.
Yeah, and Walker's talked about that. Like, we don't care. But it's one thing to say it.
We talk about it, but
yeah. But it's one thing to say it. But I still think, you know, when you have those teams that are undefeated, especially last year, like they were undefeated in stroke play, I believe, and you know that there's a little ounce that I still think affects players. You know, when you have streaks like that or perfect games going, if you will. So yeah, I'm totally on board with you. They got that out of the way. They have their five who are. What the top, you know, Kelly Sue, I think, has slipped a little bit in Wagger, but you have four of the top five players in the world amateur golf ranking. You have all five players ranked in the top 30 in the college rankings right now. This could be something where it's not who wins, it's just how much does Stanford win by. But Wake Forest is an impressive team. I still think Casey Weidenfeld, the Auburn transfer, she still hasn't rediscovered the game that she had a couple of years ago. So that could be the X factor for them getting her going. But you mentioned Rianne Malixi, and I'm going to chat with her on the phone later today. But I mean, remember about a year ago, she had a WD from the Augusta National Women's Amateur with the back injury. She played a few majors, a couple pro events, but you know, we didn't see her really ramp it up during the summer until Bandon. And she had such a great stroke play, was co-medalist with Asterisk Tally. And then I believe she got bounced in the first round of match play, didn't she?
They both did. Both both gold medalists lost the first round of math. Because you're sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, they're on the opposite side of the brackets, because you go back to 24, they met in the junior, girls junior, and the U.S. women's AM in a four-week stretch. You know, remarkable. And then you're sitting there, you're like, oh my gosh, Rhianne Maluxi's a world beater. Then the back at Augusta National Women's Amateur doesn't mean she can't be a world beater. So it's nice to see her win. And I'm old school. Winning is what matters.
And she didn't have a top 25 in the fall either. So for Duke to withstand that, and Avery McCreary, their other much ballyhooed freshman, not playing that well either. Duke, I think, has a lot of room for improvement. And so to only lose to Florida by one down at San Jose up in Jacksonville, and which, by the way, they were playing that course at like 5,800 yards or 5,900 yards. That is short. I mean, I don't know. So you know, maybe we need to see it one more from Rhianne on a bigger ballpark. But no, I think she's starting to find her groove. It'll be interesting to hear about the adjustment and maybe what was holding her back in the fall that's changed now. But so excited to chat with her. And I think we're getting the Augusta National Women's Amateur field tomorrow as well on Wednesday. So that'll be nice to, you know, a nice little treat to see who's playing.
I like it. To the Big Ten. It's been a couple years since Illinois won. They used to win every single year. They're the highest-ranked team currently at 12. UCLA in the mix, USC, the job that's been done by the Trojans to sort of get back to that cusp top 25 team. I think Illinois, they get back to their winning ways in terms of a conference championship. But you know what? It won't be as easy as it used to be.
Oh, yeah. And the last time that Illinois had lost back-to-back Big Ten titles was 2007-2008, which I think Mike Small, that might have been before Mike Small even got there. Pretty incredible, but I'm with you. I mean, there's not another team in the conference that I see stacking up. UCLA won it a year ago, but you lose Omar Morales, Pablo Araneo. Armin's done a great job, you know, keeping them amongst the top 25 teams in the country, but you know, no one's stopping Illinois. Max Herendeen is ranked 12th right now in college golf. I think he's, you know, truly one of the best pro prospects that we have in college golf right now. Great job by Mark Hankins. You know, he's kind of known as the program builder or the program rebuilder in this case, being at SC. But you look at, you know, programs like Nebraska and, you know, Missouri and Iowa, like he's done it all over and in different places and different parts of the country. If you need your program rebuilt, I think you call Mark Hankins, because he can get things back on track.
From the men to the women in the Big Ten, it kind of feels like a two-horse race, USC or Oregon. You maybe could have sold me on Northwestern, but then Arianna Lau kind of pulled that Matt Fitzpatrick, goes for a semester and doesn't go back. That's good. How about that? I think that might hurt their chances to maybe even get back to La Costa. They're good. But I felt like what we saw from her at Bandon, the women's amateur, Emily Fletcher's got a challenging spring ahead of her.
Yeah, and they're actually playing pretty well right now with, you know, in their first event without Arianna Lau. But yeah, anytime you lose a player of that caliber, which in her case is, you know, top 30 player in the world right now, you know, the highest recruit that Emily Fletcher and Northwestern have ever brought to Evanston. I think they're in Evanston, right? Is that the city? North of Chicago. But you mentioned they might not get to the Costa to defend. Like, they're only two wins above 500 right now. You know, there's a chance, and they don't play an easy schedule with the 500 rule now in effect on the women's side. There's a chance they might not even make an NCAA regional. So that's something to watch. Oregon will be interesting. When you lose a player like CV Chaya Vinachatham to the LPGA, of course, this is nothing new for that program. Brianna Chacon a couple of years ago. There's going to be some some rounds for the taking for someone to step up and contribute for this Ducks team, which is already pretty young on the back end with Sophie Hahn and others. So Derek Radley's got his hands full a little bit, but when you can lean on the number one ranked amateur in the world, Kiara Ramiro, if she can start turning some of those seconds into wins, this is a team that I think could still like its chances if it could get into match play. USC would probably be my pick at this point, but as we speak, they're at Palos Verdes right now, not playing well. Catherine Park, it was outside the top 60 after the first round, but getting a healthy Bailey Shoemaker back after she missed the fall with an arm injury and a minor surgery, that'll be big. So I'm not super worried about them, but yeah, this is a top of the conference that has certainly taken some lumps over the past couple of months.
Yeah, it's one of those two. I teeter back and forth.
It could be UCLA, though. I mean, they're leading the Therese Hession right now. And
yeah,
I still think we did not give them enough credit last year for, you know, speaking of losing players, to lose your two best players. And they were very close to making match play at the NCAA championship. I mean, that was an incredible job by Alicia. Maybe a better coaching job, you could argue, than the year before.
Yeah, where they made a run. A very good run. We will see how that plays out to the Big 12 with the men, Arizona State, Oklahoma State, the only two teams currently ranked inside the top 10. BYU, I think we thought we might see more from BYU than we have, just inside the top 30. I'm intrigued as I'll throw it on you. You thought, wow, this could be the best team they've had in decades. And it just hasn't materialized. Doesn't mean it won't. Just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I mean, they, like, it's crazy because, and this could be a rankings discussion as well, which I don't think we need to get into. But with BYU, it just shows, like, if you play a weak field and you don't play well, like, it could absolutely kill your ranking. Which is why when people say, oh, like, just schedule against weak players and beat up on them, and then you get all these points. And it's like, well, theoretically, that's a great option, but it's very risky because you could win by a lot. But if you don't play well, you're going to get hammered. And so BYU won two team titles in the fall. Kihei Akina, their star freshman, has played well. But when you finish 14th at the Bryson Invitational, that's just killing their rankings. And I'm still hopeful. I'm not going to give up on them. But again, to me, this is probably a two, maybe three team, you know, race for the Big 12, Arizona State, Oklahoma State, and then you got to add Texas Tech in there as well. And if Simon Hobdell, their freshman, can get things going, you know, they're going to, you know, be a top 10 team in the country. But I don't know. I think you're going to agree with me. Oklahoma State's probably still should be considered the favorite, even though they're ranked one behind. Because remember, they had that 10th place finish as well, middle of the season, where they were without Preston Stout and Ethan Feng as the World Amateur Team Championship. So
there's too much bad for value a team pick. That won in May. So
I'm not worried about that.
No. For the women, Big 12. I think we're kind of in the same spot, leaning to Arizona State, even though your alma mater, a little bit better in the ranking. But I don't know, Missy Farke always seems to do something in the spring. You know, I'm grabbing this one and we figured it out, and they might only have six, but they're going to be tough to beat.
Well, you know, you get that snow off the ground and Tempe, you know, mid February, early March, and, you know, things shake off the rust quickly. But no, look, I went with ASU in terms of forecasting ahead, but that's contingent on what kind of player Patience Rhodes is when she gets, back from injury. For those who don't know, she has a fracture in her leg during an accident in the winter. She was on vacation with her family, broke her leg, but yeah, she'll be out up until Augusta National Women's Amateur. That'll be expected to be her first event back, but they get Pimpisa Rubrong from Thailand, who wasn't able to play in the fall. She's enrolled. She's already played for the team. So trade one for the other, and then you get a healthy Patience back who was their best player in the fall. And, you know, that's why I think they still are the cream of the crop in the Big 12. But UCF, I mean, they haven't made the NCAA championship since 2019, which is so crazy considering the really good teams that they've had, you know, over the past 5 or 6 years. You know, we had Emily Marin, their head coach, on the pod during the fall. Look, they have some experience. They have a really good French player in Mia Jereen. This could be the year. I fingers crossed. I thought years past we could be getting back to the NCAA championship, but I think this is going to be the year. I mean, 12th national ranking for UCF, considering the facilities compared to other teams in the Power Four. Look, if they make the NCAA championship and they potentially make match play, that should be the coach of the year right there.
Let's go to the SEC, where I see Oklahoma is 13th in the national rankings. That's really good. But there's 8 other teams in the SEC ahead of them. So you could throw a dart at a board, and you got a pretty good chance with whatever team you end up with. LSU, a solid fall. Vandy. Nice to see them back, you know, for 2-3. Well, they didn't go anywhere, but we just thought they had maybe missed the window to win a national championship. Auburn, obviously, is a factor. Texas, Florida, Arkansas has played well. It can
Let's
be
have fun with this, Burko. You pick 3 teams, I'll pick 3 teams.
Old Miss, I think they're going to be in trouble because of what we talked about with Little Sasso. Give me Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Florida, and you can have the rest.
Wow.
How about that?
I like that. I mean, Florida's an interesting team too, right? Because rankings-wise, they're 6th in the country, but they got off to a little bit of a slow start. And I may have said this stat last fall sometime on the pod, but do you remember the last time they finished 10th or worse in a stroke play event?
Oh, wow. I do not.
So they did in the fall, but the previous time was the fall of 2022, where they actually did it twice. And what did they do that next spring? They win the national championship. So a lot of talent, a lot of players and personalities to sift through for JC Deacon, but that's the problem that you want to have. So I like those 3 teams. Hey, if you give me LSU, Texas.
Yeah, LSU, Vandy, Auburn, Texas.
And Vandy, those 4. Yeah. I mean, I could throw a dart at 2 of those and I'd feel good. Texas is, you know, I think on paper, Texas is the best team. They have the best world amateur golf rank average for their starting 5. But LSU, something just tells me they have intangibles that some of these other teams don't have. And even a Vanderbilt, because Vandy got to the NCAA championship last year when they really weren't supposed to. Everyone was counting them out. Gordon Sargent was struggling. So for the Commodores just to even get there, I think that was a huge win. And it was a huge juxtaposition from the year before when, you know, they get bounced in the quarterfinals of match play. But LSU's got something that these other teams don't have, and that they got bounces from regionals as a number 1 seed. Like, mm-hmm. That's probably one of, and there's not a lot of teams that have done it. Certainly there's more on the men's side than the women's, but you know, that's as embarrassing as it gets for an elite program to not even get to the NCAA championship, to be a top-ranked seed in regionals and get eliminated. And so they have a huge chip on their shoulder. And at the same time, the cupboard's not bare either. Like, Jake Amos has a ton of talent. Arnie Svensson, of course, the player from Iceland, great player. But Noah McWilliams, what he's been able to do, the Bayou DJ, Kenny Powers, to step up and be an All-American type player from maybe not even being on the team. Like, when Jake, he's told us that. Like, when he first got to campus, he's like, either this guy's never going to play for me, or he's going to be like first team All-American. And to Noah's credit, like, he stopped drinking you know, 4 liters of Dr. Pepper a day, and he's down to 2 liters of Dr. Pepper a day, and the golf is following suit. So LSU is my pick, but Texas is the best team on paper, in my opinion.
For the women, very similar scenario in the SEC. A lot of talent. I think we're both bullish on Arkansas. I want to see them run the table. I feel like we have had the conversation, Great Falls, and then maybe trending in the wrong direction. I'm going to go to Texas. I've always thought highly of that 1-2 punch of Farrow, Keith, and Lauren Kim. I think year two for Laura Iannello as the head coach, now kind of settling into things in Austin. Very similar to the man, you can pick 6-7 teams and feel good. So I'm going to go with the Longhorns that they're going to figure it out this spring.
Yeah, I think Arkansas just has too much talent, especially they add Sarah Breton Chef from France. She enrolled early. She's slotted right into the lineup for their opening win in Puerto Rico. So talent-wise, there's not another team that I think can compare. A&M's been very good. Like, they've won a bunch. Not many teams have beaten them so far this season. Well coached. They've immediately hit that reset button, and they're back amongst the best teams. So those are kind of the two I tab. Auburn took a little bit of a hit. It looks like their sophomore, Balmo Davalos, she could be out the entirety of the spring. So that just puts a little bit more on Anna Davis, Katie Cranson, who, as you said, won at Eagle Creek a couple of weeks ago for her first college win. That puts a lot more pressure on them. I don't know. Vanderbilt, to start the spring, they got off to a slow start, put together a couple of really good rounds to finish T2. I don't know if there's a team in that teens that I really see taking a huge leap. I mean, South Carolina has had to replace a lot of talent. Mississippi State as well, though they have a really great player in Avery Weed, who's, you know, the top-ranked player in women's college golf. I don't know if there's any dark horses. Maybe Florida, you know, maybe after the shuttle debacle a year ago, maybe that is one of those things that, you know, they just show up at La Costa this time and are just really attentive, you know, to every detail, and they could play well. I wouldn't put it past them.
It will be fun. It's February. Those are our thoughts. The outcomes 3 months from now will likely look a lot different. But good to be back, my friend. We are off and running in 2026. College Golf Talk continuing to roll along. And as always, we appreciate the folks for tuning in each and every week. We'll do it again next week. For Brett Lamberto, thanks for listening to College Golf Talk.